Hallo, ihr hört das Freifunkradio auf 88,4 MHz in Berlin und 90,7 MHz in Potsdam. Wir haben heute zwei Gäste hier vom Battle Mesh von New York City. Das heißt, dieses Interview ist in Englisch.
So, who are you and what are you doing here in Berlin?
I'm Brian Hall. I'm an organizer with NYC Mesh. I first heard about Battle Mesh about 4 years ago when I was doing research into all the successful community networks around the world, and I finally made it.
Great. I hope you enjoy your trip with us. And you?
My name is Zach Giles, and I'm the network organizer or the network engineer for New York City Mesh.
So you're the CTO of New York City?
No, we don't really have titles, but it depends on how much work you do and what order you do it. But so thought I would come see what was going on with routing protocols, and we certainly read lots of the documentation online from all the other groups and want to meet them and exchange ideas and so on.
The documentation is probably poor, I suppose.
As is ours.
And some of that is in German, I suppose.
That's okay.
Yeah. Okay. It's okay for you.
I mean, it's just Google Translate things, right? You just look at the middle part.
This is very technical. Yeah, I understand. Well, there's some questions that we usually, if we do interviews with communities, we'll ask them, how many nodes do you have? What routing algorithms do you use? What are the typical devices that you deploy?
A lot of ubiquity devices, some TP-Links for home routers. Network protocols, we use BMX6. We were using... Zach can talk about that.
Oh, okay. Yeah, I mean, we have kind of two different meshes that are overlapping each other at the moment because we're trying to modernize the mesh system. We were stuck on some radios that were a couple years old, a certain ubiquity model that we couldn't get off of, and we had a lot of trouble with firmware. So we have a BMX6 section of the mesh. We have a BGP section of mesh that is enabled by multiple different types of hardware. So we can use MikroTik, we can use Cisco, we can use Ubiquiti, and we could just use Linux and FreeBSD with Bird and Quagga and so on. So we currently mix these two with mixed success as well, but we're trying to move towards one or the other and that kind of thing. So I think this is similar to how Gwifi does things. Maybe they're definitely more organized than us. You know, we're trying to follow this kind of mixed model to have multiple neighborhoods interconnect, which in our case they're not very big neighborhoods, but they're very dense because in the middle of the city.
Yeah, this is historically, Berlin was one of the places, together with Amsterdam, at the very beginning of this community networking movement, that we were pretty radical in that we were, from the beginning, were using mesh networking, while others like Gifi, they had just a plan to build a community network with whatever technology was usable and available. And of course, you need some routing protocol because editing routing table by hands.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah. You definitely need a routing protocol. No question about that.
Yeah.
Yeah. We're trying to bridge the gap between community and mesh. We want to be fully mesh, but we also want it to work all the time. And we want to be able to give really good service to people from every level, where people who don't understand how it works all the way up to very technical people. And so we're trying to mix this where we have, gigabit level links at some places, and in other places it's just whatever you can get from the rooftop from, some kind of open mesh type thing. So we're working on both to try and mix both at the same time.
So your network is for a large part actually doing radio communication and not just connecting via DSL, ADSL, or fiber, or whatever lines, because we have the situation with many communities. Some of them, they mostly are actually providing hotspots that are interconnected via the internet. Berlin, in that regard, is one of the few places where most of the stuff actually is actually radio operated. So we have a backhaul structure. I suppose you have that too when you say you have gigabit links.
Yes, we're mostly all radio based. We're working on trying to get fiber to different areas. But what that would do for us is that would create some kind of super node type ring situation where those things enable more radio communication in that area. So the goal is not to kind of replace or supplant DSL and fiber, but rather, still be a mesh, but use whatever technology is correct at the moment, including fiber, all mixed together.
And how many nodes do you have?
It's 150.
150. And when did you start deploying, or when did New York City Mesh actually start?
It's 3.5 years ago we got our first node up. From my apartment window to the local bar.
That's pretty young.
It still works.
Yeah, it's still going. We still hold meetups at the bar.
Why did you start it? Was it nerdiness, or were you concerned about surveillance? Did you want to help people in the community that are poor? So these are some of the motivations that people
It was all those things. We have this list of 12 things, reasons why we do this. And there's one thing that unites everybody is they hate the ISPs in New York.
I think that's pretty universal. For us, it's Deutsche Telekom.
In New York, there's 4 big ISPs, but they don't compete. So, like in my building, you only get 1 ISP. That's one choice.
So, what would they charge you, and what bandwidth would they offer in the area where you live?
I was on the very cheapest plan, which they called Extreme, I think.
Extreme, not performance.
That was $50 a month, and
$50 a month.
Yeah, and. And supposedly, I think it was 50 megabits a second, but it was usually around 30.
Okay. Well, yeah, most of these networks are overbooked.
Yeah.
I think by a factor of 7, usually.
I would put more on that.
I think it's a lot more than that.
Yeah, 50 or 100 to 1,
Okay, so you have 150 nodes. So one reason was that you think that your ISPs stink. And what are the other reasons? Or what are your personal reason? Your greatest motivation was that you didn't like the ISPs.
Yeah, personally, I was stuck in this software gig for like 10 years working on this very niche program. And come to a stage where I thought, wow, this is my life's work, this stupid program I'm working on. It was successful and it paid the rent. I wanted to do something that might have a bit of an impact on the world, and I thought community networks really had the chance to do that.
It is kind of strange that we have a community network and trying to serve underserved areas in New York City, which is this extreme dense, populous place. But because of the extreme density and so on, it kind of goes back the other way. We have people who are in extreme poverty, and even they don't have internet at home for the kids to do their homework, which is all online now. And so we hear stories, and we're working with some other groups that, this kind of situation really does happen. So I think we have some kind of, one of our overarching missions is to do underserved areas, which we're still trying to get out to. We have some areas now. But
yeah, we did a housing association building a few weeks ago.
Yeah.
Which we've been wanting to do for a long time. They're perfect for us because people really need the internet and they're really tall, so we can use that to get further out into the city.
Exactly.
I suppose you're getting support from the municipality.
No.
No.
I think it's going to happen soon. Everybody's noticing what we're doing in the city now. So.
Because in Berlin, we got granted access to like church towers by the church, or like tall municipality buildings, so we could actually install some stuff on the roof. We even got some funding, not for wages or anything like that, but for hardware and for installations. Because on municipality buildings or churches, you can't just drill a hole. You have to hire an official guy who is officially allowed and certified to drill holes. Or
but do you make the deal with the building owner or with the city who brokers it to the owner? Like a church, for example.
Like we managed to do it with some churches. Yeah. Mm-hmm. So they even provide the electricity. Well, of course, it's not a lot, but they actually do it. So one of their conditions were that no content is offered from the church itself, like that we don't have any servers running on the churches, so only like a lighthouse for communication, like a relay station.
They won't get into trouble because of contents hosted there.
Yeah, there's often there is like concerns about legal issues. Is that the same for you?
It hasn't been so far.
Right? Yeah.
A lot of people ask, cause it's, but everyone's really happy to have a router on their roof and to extend the network. Mm.
But so how do you find places where you can assemble exposed nodes, like for such a gigabit link? Usually you need a high site.
Yeah.
So you have free line of sight.
We have a few high sites, a couple of different buildings. So we do rent, we lease a square on the rooftop of a commercial data center at a very good deal, in order to kind of have, that's our supernode one. And from there we get a connection to the internet exchange. So we have public open peering in order to get some of the nice routes. And from there, we also connect to a supernode 2, which is on a building that used to be a firehouse or something like that. It has some kind of other kind of space at the moment. I don't know what it is. What do you call it, Brian? Is it like an artist community thing?
It's an apartment building.
It's an apartment building.
Yeah.
Okay.
There's some alternative lifestyle people in there.
So we have an antenna on there, and they're cool with it. And we're working on a school. We're working on a chimney. We have something on an old factory. Where the owners were cool, were fine with it. So just these kind of things, and a lot of other buildings. So we have some other buildings, what we call hub nodes, where maybe it's a condos building, and they have 10 floors or 12 floors, and put something on top if they're willing to do that. So basically, just scouting out locations.
Yeah, so you're getting along. Mm. Yeah. Sounds like.
Yes.
But you don't have to pay for the locations because you made a deal with someone.
No, so our agreement, or the way it works is, if you want to put a node, you have to allow, I mean, it's your node, you own it, mm-hmm. and it's on your building, and so if there's no permission, then that's the person mm-hmm. who wants the node's fault, or that's their responsibility mm-hmm. to try and get the node's location. So they have to figure out how to let their building say yes to that. But if you're in a condo where everyone's the owner of the building together, then you propose it to the board, or you just do it because you also own the building. But a lot of our installations, people just choose to do it, and there's already a plethora of satellite dishes and things like that, so you just put it right next to that, and that's okay. It's kind of generally allowed. If you live in a building, you can put up a satellite dish. So this is the modern satellite dish.
Right? Oh, course. Some of them look like a satellite dish.
Yeah.
Yes, of course.
Some kind of weird antenna, has a logo on it, or nobody knows what it really does, and there's a wire that goes down.
Yeah.
So, and you had good press coverage and media coverage in New York, at least?
It's been crazy, especially since they overturned the net neutrality ruling in December. Most of our installs are video people that want to come along and video the installs, and we've been in the major daily newspapers. We're in Canadian Broadcasting Commission, did a 20-minute video of us. It's been kind of crazy. We definitely don't have to advertise at all.
How many people are you there? What's the core group of New York City Mesh?
You too?
No, for a while it was much beyond us too. But,
it comes and goes. Some volunteers drop out and some come back. And
But at the moment there's maybe 12 core people.
About 12 core people.
Oh, wow, that's pretty decent.
One of our meetups, if we have a meetup at a bar, for example, we'll get 40 or 50 people.
Okay, but people that do maintenance and support and stuff, that's
people
are
there
dozen.
Every day.
Yeah,
like,
it's probably about 12.
Yeah.
What do you say, every day?
Like people that are working on stuff every day. There's, there's 12 core people doing that.
Okay. And do you have an idea how many people you actually serve with your 150 nodes? How many people, I suppose, on your devices, you always run an access point?
Yeah, so yeah, there's a lot of open access points. I don't know. The one I have in my window usually has 10 people connected at the same time. So we don't have very good metrics yet, do we?
We have good metrics on specific points. Some of our locations, every signal and every noise floor component, they're all mapped because we want to know on some of the towers. But we don't have good metrics about devices that are deep into the mesh out in the field. But, you know, we definitely don't want to collect any data or anything at all, but it would be nice to know, you know, how many DHCP leases were handed out yesterday. That's a good question to kind of, you know, get a feel about what's going on in terms of use, and then you could go create a bigger node there maybe if there's a high demand.
It's of course interesting to know, and also a good fact to tell if you can tell. Per node, we serve on average like 25 people a day.
I think it's probably...
So you have a house number.
It's probably many hundreds, right, that walk by it or use it on a periodic basis, but that use it as their primary internet connection. It's less than 100, but maybe it's about 100 that use it as their primary internet connection.
At least 100, yeah.
Yeah, yeah, so people who really don't have much else besides NYC Mesh for... Yeah.
And you have regular meetings every week, every 2 weeks?
No, it has been whenever I decide to have a meeting. But a meetup has a button so it recurs every month. So we have regular monthly meetings now. Okay. That's just a recent thing.
And we have lots of other planning meetings that are a smaller set of people, just so we can continue to do things. You know, you have to hold each other accountable for getting stuff done.
Yeah, I found that very useful to have really small meetings.
Are there any really annoying topics, stuff that frequently gets in your way that you would like to complain about?
Every week someone comes to me with their latest blockchain plan, how we could combine the blockchain with the mesh, and it's just absurd. It doesn't make any sense.
Of course it doesn't. Other than that...
That's the main one.
That's the main one, I think.
Yeah.
Very, very acceptable.
Did this happen to you as well?
It didn't happen to me. Did it happen to you, Andy?
No.
It's in the US, it's become confused. People think mesh is somehow to do with blockchains now.
Yeah. I think the other thing that's maybe problematic for us has been, up till recently, firmware. You know, we had a lot of trouble recreating a good firmware on the same device because, you know, the code bases moved past what our build position was. And so we spent a lot of time trying to realign ourselves to the head of every project and so on. And now with some of the OpenWrt and Lead coming together, that has really been a positive thing for our firmware. And now we just have to kind of, now that that's working and we can actually compile things, and then they work when you run them, we can...
Surprise!
This is the complaint part, right? I mean, now that it all works, kind of, now we can start testing interconnectivity and things to try and make it stronger.
What are the favorite devices that you buy today? In our community, it works like this, probably... Might be the same for you, that beginners come and they ask which type of device should I buy.
Yeah.
What is the device that you would recommend to a person that wants to join your network these days? If they just want to put something to their window, pick up the signal and share it with the neighbors.
Depends on what neighborhood they're in. Mm-hmm. So not all of our neighborhoods are using exactly the same model, but if you're wanting to connect to one of the super nodes, either being a hub node or just a direct client, you can use one of the Ubiquiti antennas. And then we usually stick some kind of mesh router there as well. So it's a point-to-multi-point connection with a router so that they're now contributing to the mesh and they can link rooftop to rooftop.
Yeah, that was actually also part of my question. Like Ubiquiti, we have the situation because of this radar issue with the FCC, which is also trickling down to us here in Europe. Mm-hmm. You cannot install open firmware anymore to some devices.
So this is one of our problems, is that we, along with the firmware issue where we've been really behind, we've been behind in device models as well, and we were stuck on a NanoStation M5 for a long time. And we're trying to find nice 802.11ac devices so we can get good performance and functionality and modern type of use, but on an open firmware. So we're using both open firmwares and closed firmwares.
So you mix them. You have the Ubiquiti devices with the stock firmware,
yes.
And then you use them as a bridge.
We use some as bridge, we use some as routers, we use OpenWrt on Ubiquiti gear, we use MikroTik, we use MikroTik in bridge mode, in routing mode, we use Linux boxes.
Uh-huh. So whatever comes to way. Yes. But it sounds like a really hard to maintain hardware zoo.
I don't know. It's, you know, each subsection of the city kind of has its own way of doing things, and so we have kind of multiple administrators with a very similar looking pattern. Yeah. So it would be hard if we wanted to like roll an update to everything simultaneously, but we're not.
That's
really,
what necessary.
We're not really doing that.
Yeah, it's sure.
Kind of, you know, each node can be maintained individually.
Did I understand it right? It sounds as if you have a kind of hierarchy of the devices or nodes, super nodes, hub nodes, mesh routers.
Kind of. It's not hierarchy. Not hierarchical in the sense that we want to have some. Higher set of people or higher set of group, but the idea is that we want to create express routes between different neighborhoods which can't see each other.
Yeah, you have different tiers of the network.
But you could route along the bottom if you wanted to, or you could route rooftop to rooftop, or you could jump across neighborhood rooftop to rooftop. We're not, you know, forcing it to go to the top. Okay. But we do have this idea of making especially internet exchange connected, open, net neutral, pure internet. And Supernode should have that. And hub nodes are just kind of a slightly lower building. Doesn't have to be lower, but maybe, which will serve the neighborhood around it. Mm. New York has this problem where there's a lot of tall buildings and a lot of short buildings, and they're in between each other. And so you get neighborhoods that can't see each other just like you would normally between cities in a region. Yep. So we're kind of a region, even though it's only two subway stops away. And so we're trying to create this express route network where you don't jump 20 mesh hops away. You jump up to and over and down.
Well, 20 hops in a strictly multi-point to multi-point manner would not perform in any way.
That's the point, yeah.
Especially in New York City, probably.
Same what we call backbone connection.
Backbone or backhaul.
Backhaul, yeah.
Yeah, these are all the same thing. We just call the certain class of node super node in order to try and help people understand that this one is somehow super compared to the other ones.
Mm-hmm, okay.
So it has more antennas.
We actually use the term too, but we use it on the towers. We have like a switch with like 20 ports and 12 different devices aiming in all different directions.
Yeah. That's kind of how ours work as well.
So
we haven't got up to 12 devices. On
no, we have one that has four sectors and a point-to-point, a gigabit point-to-point, and another one that has... three sectors and a single point-to-point, and another one that has two sectors and one point-to-point, and one that has two point-to-points. So, you know, some of them they're not super, like your guys' notes, but we're trying to get there.
No, we had some money from an institution here in Berlin, from the regulator for television and radio, not like the FCC, but they're separated in Germany. So you have one regulator just for frequencies, and the other one is for like what is actually on the broadcast for public communication. And we had some funding, and we spent that on that gear. So for a while we felt quite overfunded for a short time.
Yeah, it was a lot of money to spend for routers and. Yeah. Nodes.
But actually, at least that installation that I did together with Bastian and some other people, it's running since years, since we've built it, and with only very minimal maintenance. And so this means that all the gear that you've deployed has been funded by the community.
We've got two grants, one from the Internet Society for $30,000. We just got $10,000 from Mozilla.
And more to come.
I'm not sure. If we get to the next stage of the Mozilla, then it's serious money.
But it is important to note that we kind of took a chance on some of the super nodes and just deployed it, and we're in the hole for money for a while, and that came out of the grant. But Supernode 1, for example, is 100% funded by donations coming in every month. Mm-hmm. And so that's for the rent and everything and the tower and all that stuff. So that does not draw in from the grant anymore. So now we can use that money for other things like, radios.
Yeah, I actually added up how much we spent on the housing association building. We're just putting up small routers. Like, I think the most expensive was $90. That ended up being nearly $2,000 worth of equipment.
Yeah, went a little crazy. That's what floor planning does, right? You end up putting one of everything in.
No, we actually needed those devices, but just putting up a lot of small devices, it does add up in the one building.
So what's the longest distance you get with your point-to-point connections?
What's your long shot?
It's not super long. I think we have, Supernova 1 to Supernova 2, is it 6 kilometers?
Mm-hmm.
Is it approximately?
Yeah, about that.
I think it's 6. We could look it up on the internet. It shows it publicly, but yeah. I think it's about 6 kilometers. And that's about 700, 800 megabits on a 24 gigahertz.
Okay.
Which
using AirFiber.
AirFiber 24, donated. We have a couple other point-to-multipoint links. Some clients are pretty far out. What's the longest Supernova 1 client, Brian?
It's just 3 kilometers.
3 kilometers. So that's not super long. But I have another antenna pointing from downtown Manhattan to Queens, and waiting for the guy on the other side to put up his antenna. But that should be... That'll probably be our newest long haul, which will be a 5 gigahertz, 80 megahertz channel.
Hmm.
So we'll try and jump that all the way out there if possible.
So one question that I wanted to ask earlier, if I would buy a Ubiquiti NanoStation M5 today in the United States, can I still install open source firmware from the community?
It's getting more and more complicated. You've got to go back to a specific version of
the firmware?
Yeah, and then once you get that one, you go back to another version of the firmware. You gotta flash it twice.
Okay, but you can still do it without soldering and
attack. Without soldering.
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah, but we're looking for some other devices. We're looking at GLI net devices and other ones like this. It's we're hoping that we can take some of the MikroTik ones that have a nice 802.11 AC chip. I think there's a new QCA one that just came out, which we're quite happy with, and see if we can put something open on that as well. But yeah, you're 100% correct. It's harder to. It's getting weirder now in terms of flashing. Like TP-Link had several different models of a router that Brian was using, and one of them was not flashable after a while, and then they had another model, right?
Well, TP-Link was coming out with new versions of the 842, like every 6 months or so, and there's no way OpenWRT could even keep up with it.
Mm. Yeah, and finally they came up with, in Germany, with Revision 13, which has a MediaTek chipset that is relatively poor. So we have, the support is lacking for the chipset a lot. Unfortunately, I really liked it because it was a bread and butter device, very cheap, very low power, decent.
Yeah.
So unfortunately, these times are gone, and 842 is not available in Europe at all at this point. I think they stopped production. So we also have this problem in trying to keep up. And of course, if they change the chipset from one brand to the other, then unfortunately, we're out of luck.
Yeah, so we have some thoughts about trying to find, some brands kind of leave a device on the market for a while and find if it happens to have a good chipset. Or something that happens to also be another device that we know can be made to be open.
Maybe you've heard about the Libre Router project where they plan to build their own routers.
We're still not ready for production.
Yeah, and the problem is it's a plan to build, and we don't want to wait to put up more nodes.
But maybe that's the way we have to go at the end, to build our own hardware if we want to.
No, we're actually doing it, but. It's a steep process. It's like until you have everything sorted out, especially because the Libre router is a pretty ambitious project because there are so many features and so many radios. What is stopping us from actually starting production is sorting out a radio issue with the onboard 2.4 gigahertz radio at the moment.
Did you get support for 802.11ac?
We have two mini PCI Express slots, but as far as we are concerned, all the radios on board are supported by the proven ATH9K driver, and that's also the reason why we did it. So we have a two stream or three stream MIMO in the 5 gigahertz band, but it's not AC because at the moment there is no AC chipset that I would recommend, except maybe the MediaTek stuff, but I haven't tested it. Felix Fietker is here. He is working on that. Well, that's pretty much it.
Yep.
Thank you very much for the opportunity to talk here.
Yep.
Thank you.